Welcome back to Innovation on Dakota Midday. I'm Kara Hetland, and joining me now is Ken Croswell. He is an astronomer and author, and he lives in Berkeley, California. And he joins us now to talk about Pluto and what scientists are learning as New Horizons did its flyby on July 14th. Ken, thanks for coming back on the program.
Glad to be here, Kara.
Happy to have you. So let's talk a little bit about New Horizons took off, 2006? Is that right?
That's right. January of 2006, and then it flew past Jupiter the following year, and Jupiter hurled it out to Pluto at very high speed, and it passed Pluto last month.
Last month. And talk about the level of excitement here.
Well, Pluto has always been this very mysterious world on the fringe of the solar system, the ninth planet. And we didn't really know much about it because we've wanted to send spacecraft to it for a long time, ever since the 1960s. You may recall the Voyager project, which sent two spacecraft past the giant planets of our solar system, Jupiter, Saturn, Uranus, and Neptune. And there was originally, in the original plan, there was supposed to be a third spacecraft that would have flown past Jupiter, Saturn, and then Pluto. But unfortunately, because of funding reasons, that third spacecraft got canceled. So we scientists have wanted to send a spacecraft to Pluto for a long, long, long time because, you know, through even the best telescopes, you know, even the Hubble Space Telescope, we really can't see much. And there's just nothing that compares with actually flying past the planet to see what it looks like. And indeed, when we flew past Pluto, we saw all sorts of exciting things that we did not really expect to see.
And let's go through the list. Tell me some of the things that surprised you.
Well, I was really delighted to see that Pluto has a heart. Literally, there's this heart-shaped feature that's about 1,000 miles across. No one anticipated that. It's going to be named for the discoverer of Pluto, Clyde Tombaugh. He discovered Pluto back in 1930. Another thing that was very surprising, located within that heart, are these mountains that are incredibly tall, about 2 miles high, about as high as the Rockies, and they're made, though, they're not made of rock the way they are here on Earth. They're made of water ice, which at Pluto's very frigid temperature of minus 390 degrees Fahrenheit is as hard as rock. So the fact that you have these mountains means you've got processes on Pluto that are very active. We didn't expect such a small world. I mean, this is a planet that's smaller than Earth, and in fact, smaller than the Earth's moon. We did not expect such a small world to have such activity, and yet it obviously does.
And now, New Horizons, was it able to do some measurements and those kinds of things too that you could see that it could?
Oh yeah, well one measurement we finally know the diameter of Pluto. We have not known the diameter of Pluto as well as we would have liked because it's so far away, and we finally know how big Pluto is. For a long time, during the 50s, 60s, and most of the 70s, we thought Pluto was in between the size of Mercury and Mars, bigger than Mercury but smaller than Mars. But then in 1978, astronomer James Christie discovered a moon going around Pluto, and that moon revealed the mass of Pluto because it feels Pluto's gravity. And that showed that Pluto had a lot less mass than Mercury, in fact, a lot less mass than the moon. And then during the 1980s, Pluto and that moon eclipsed each other. And that gave us an approximate estimate of how big Pluto is. But now we have a much more precise measure, and that number is 1,473 miles in diameter. So that's about half the diameter of Mercury and 2.5 times the diameter of the largest asteroid between Mars and Jupiter, which is named Ceres. And significantly, it means that Pluto is the largest object orbiting the sun beyond the planet Neptune. 10 years ago, there was an object discovered called Eris, which is the farthest thing ever seen in our solar system. It's 3 times farther than Pluto. And it was claimed by the discoverer to be definitely bigger than Pluto. In fact, the discoverer said, if it's not larger than Pluto, then I'm going to eat my telescope. Well, all I can say is I think the discoverer may be having telescope stew for dinner because, in fact, Pluto has turned out to be bigger than Eris by about 30 miles. Pluto is 1,473 miles in diameter. Eris is 1,445 miles in diameter. And we know that because in 2010, Eris passed in front of a star cut off the star's light, and the duration of that eclipse revealed Eris's diameter. But Pluto and Eris are actually very similar worlds, and I classify both of them as planets.
Now, is all of the data collected by New Horizons, is that fair game? Is that open to all astronomers and scientists to look at?
It's open to the general public, too, yeah.
Okay.
I mean, if someone wants to use the New Horizons data to... I mean, your tax dollars paid for this mission, right? I mean, this mission cost $700 million, and so if anyone wants to analyze the data from New Horizons and come up with a theory to explain a lot of the mysterious things we're seeing on Pluto and its five moons, you're welcome to it, whether you're a scientist, whether you're a non-scientist, whether you're an American or in some other country. Yes, anyone can use that data. However, the spacecraft obtained so much data during the flyby in July that it's going to take another year, in fact, more than a year, to beam all that data back to Earth. So I expect we're going to be hearing about new discoveries from the Pluto encounter in the months ahead. In fact, probably even next year. I wouldn't be surprised if there's some announcement of some major discovery concerning Pluto and its moons from this data.
Now, Ken, there's a lot of, you know, there's been a lot of debate, and you fall on the side that Pluto is a planet, should be a planet. Is that right?
That's right, yes. Pluto is the ninth largest object that goes around the sun. I think it's sufficiently large to be a planet. On the other hand, the reason for this controversy is it falls in between the definite planets and the asteroids. I mean, it's half the diameter of Mercury, which is the smallest object that everyone agrees is a planet, but it's 2.5 times the diameter of Ceres, which is the largest asteroid going around the sun between Mars and Jupiter. So different astronomers have different opinions as to how to classify Pluto. I think Pluto is sufficiently large and interesting that it should be called a planet, but there are other people that think it's not sufficiently large to be called a planet. What I will tell you is that the vast majority of the scientists working on New Horizons, who are all Pluto experts, I'd say the vast majority of them definitely would consider Pluto to be a planet.
There were also some dark streaks detected in some of the images. Is that right? What does that mean?
I wish I knew. This is very interesting. We see similar things on the Earth and Mars, and they're wind streaks. The prevailing wind causes these streaks to occur. That's perhaps what's happening on Pluto. We do know Pluto has an atmosphere, and that atmosphere, although tenuous, is surprisingly made of the same gas, the same main gas in our atmosphere, namely nitrogen. So that's the more prosaic possibility. However, there is another possibility that's much more exciting, and that is Pluto may have geysers. We know that in 1989, when the Voyager 2 spacecraft flew past Neptune, it detected geysers on Neptune's largest moon, which is called Triton. And Triton is very similar in size, mass, and density to Pluto. And so there's been a lot of speculation that, well, Pluto might have geysers as well. In the case of Triton, these geysers shoot nitrogen gas 5 miles high into the atmosphere. We have not yet detected actual geysers on Pluto, but it's conceivable that those dark streaks, are actually the debris of geysers.
Now, we're also getting glimpses from New Horizons about the moons surrounding Pluto?
That's right. Pluto has five moons. Not bad for something that's supposedly not a planet, huh? the moons are interesting objects in and of themselves. The closest moon to Pluto and the first one to be found is the largest. It's half the diameter of Pluto. Its name is Charon. It's got some interesting features on it. It's got a polar cap, but unlike the polar caps of the Earth and Mars, which are bright, this polar cap is dark. We think it's probably made of methane and other hydrocarbons. And the satellite also has some very deep canyons, about 6 miles deep. That's much deeper than the Earth's Grand Canyon, which is only about a mile deep. And we suspect that the canyon was made not by a river flowing across Charon's surface, but instead something caused the entire surface of that moon to fracture and rip apart. And we see a similar process has happened on the planet Mars. There's a very big and very long canyon on Mars that we think formed in the same way. So Pluto and Charon are certainly the stars of the show, and then there are other moons. Two of them we have seen, gotten a little bit of information, are Nix and Hydra, And they're small moons, and they're not round, which is hardly surprising, since a small object does not have enough gravity to hold it to squeeze itself into a round shape. So these moons are sort of shaped like one of them kind of looks like a jelly bean, and the other one looks a bit like the state of Michigan. So if you're small, you don't have to be round.
Now, what do we take away from learning all of this about Pluto and its moons?
Well, Pluto is part of a ring of objects beyond the planet Neptune called the Edgeworth-Kuiper Belt that contains more than 1,000 known objects. Pluto is the largest of these objects. Eris is the second largest, and they're both considerably larger than anything else out there. This is leftover debris from the formation of the other planets. So if you wanted, for example, to build the planet Neptune, what you would do is basically smash together a bunch of Plutos, about 8,000 Plutos, add a little hydrogen for atmosphere, and you would have your own personal Neptune and be the envy of your neighbors. So Pluto basically is a building block of the planets, and so it tells us something about the formation of the solar system. And you know, one thing we know about our solar system is we live in a very good solar system. I mean, this is a solar system that gave rise to a planet with life. And when we look at other solar systems out there, many of them are radically different from our own and probably could not support any form of life. So one thing we'd like to learn is, why did our solar system turn out so well? And by studying building blocks of the giant planets, we can learn that.
And New Horizons is still moving, correct?
Oh, yes. It's going out about 30,000 miles an hour. And in a few years, it's going to encounter another object in the Edgeworth-Kuiper Belt. Now, this other object is going to be much more typical. It's going to be a very small object. Pluto, again, is the ninth largest object that goes around the sun. So it's pretty big, actually. This other object that the spacecraft will encounter will probably be just 20 or 30 or 40 miles across. So to be honest, not nearly as interesting, but, you know, you've got the spacecraft there, and it's passing through this this belt of objects. Why not look at something else, too?
And are there plans to send up another spacecraft to do another similar fact-finding mission? Or?
Well, not at this time. I think what we'll want to do is simply, as I said, it's going to take about a year and a half for New Horizons to beam all the information that it obtained back to Earth. And I think after we have all that information, then we can decide, well, do we want to send another spacecraft to Pluto? Or would it be more profitable to perhaps explore Eris, which is almost as big as Pluto and is also in the Edgeworth-Kuiper Belt? That might be more useful. Or, you know, do we want to devote our attention to other objects in the solar system? I mean, our solar system is full of very interesting, many interesting places to go to. You know, lots of planets, lots of interesting moons, asteroids, comets, and you know, certainly I can imagine Pluto will be a target of a future mission, but right now I think we're just waiting to see what all the data from New Horizons tell us before we plan another mission there.
Now, in looking at this, some of these images, I found myself saying, now, if I look at it, I would see one thing, but another a scientist would look at it and see maybe something else. And is that then part of what's going to happen with all of this data?
Well, I think there's going to be debate on how some of these features that you see actually formed, because it's surprised scientists that Pluto's surface is so active. One way we can tell that a surface is active is the lack of impact craters. Pluto does not have many craters on its surface. The moon, of course, does, but the moon is a very old surface. The fact that Pluto has so few craters indicates its surface is young, and it's a very active planet.
All right, Ken Croswell, I want to thank you for taking time today and coming on Innovation. We really appreciate it, and we'll keep in touch and have you back again as more information is coming.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Ken Croswell is an astronomer and author, and he lives in Berkeley, California. Also want to thank Amy Scott Stoltz and Twain Fink for coming on the program today. Also, Tom Campbell for being on the show as well. Special thanks to the support group, Scott Jensen, Steve Zwemke, and Keely Boltina for their assistance with the program today. Science Friday continues here on South Dakota Public Broadcasting. I'm Kara Hetland. Have a great weekend.